Yes, we are starting the at-large GTLD working group meeting.
Thank you. Okay, welcome. Hopefully a few more people will show up, but welcome to this. And I apologize up front if I'm flakier than normal. I've been on three panels already today, and this is my last thing that I have to do during this week. Everything else I get to just listen, observe, and be obnoxious. So if I'm worse than normal. So anyhow, getting right to it, we have basically three things on our agenda. The first one is a SARP review. As most of you know, but just to put it on the record, the Joint Applicant Support Group was sort of the first part that put together the recommendations. It then had formed a small group that worked with the staff and the board when they were first implementing or coming up with the implementation. The Joint Applicant Support Group, or JAS as it's known, although we were in another meeting earlier today that was being translated to the Chinese, and we kept talking about JAS without ever having explained what JAS was, and I can't imagine how they translated. But in any case, part of, especially when we use acronyms that sound like real words. So anyhow, and then this group basically is the inheritor. This group was formed largely out of people who had been members of the JAS group. So I've asked both Carla, who was the predominant staff person on that group, but also Christine Willett, who is now responsible for its results and whatever comes after to come. Partly, we had questions about how it worked. We had a person on the SARP who was there to sort of represent the policy recommendation that had gone through, but unfortunately she was either gagged or felt unable to report on anything. We have been asking for a while as to who was even on it, and we were told that we couldn't know that. So I'm hoping that with this having ended now, we can sort of find out who was on it, find out something about how it worked. And also, I think very important for us, and that discussion may continue beyond today, is we're hoping that we can build on this for the future so that next time we'll be able to advertise that we're having a support applicant program before we even start to advertise that we're having the applications, so that we can actually achieve the goals we had for JAS and Joint Applicant Support, which was to get a lot more developing economy applicants and to have people know about the fact that they can get financial aid early enough in the planning procedure to be able to actually apply. So, Carla, if you can sort of take those questions and sort of tell us a story.
Oh, I had to remember the questions. Okay.
I can repeat them.
Good. So my name is Carla Valenti. I'm with ICANN staff. Thank you for having me here today. I was the staff person that supported the JAS working group that was responsible for basically the foundation of what is today the applicant support program. We had only three applications. One was approved and two were not. I'm not able to speak details about the approvals and non-approvals for obvious reasons. We did have a very qualified panel. We had about 80 applications, and for some time we waited to see how many applicants we would get. We didn't really get that many applicants, which it's, one of the issues that Avery and others have been talking about, which is outreach. How much more outreach in the future should we do, and how can we improve that in order to really have a significant number of applicants taking advantage of the applicant support program? and the outreach and all the communication activities for that program, they came to play very late. There were many reasons why this happened that doesn't... it's not a place to rewind now, but there is obviously improvement that can happen on that side of the program. We had a very good and qualified panel. One of the things that we told the community is that we would tell the names of the panelists after the applicant support program results were communicated to the applicants and later to the community, and we haven't done it yet, so sorry for that. I can tell you the chair of that panel is one of the community members here, and he's around, which is Zahid. But the names of the other panelists... I don't have right now with me all of the names and the titles, but we should make something public soon so you know exactly who they are. And I think, and I hope that you will be as impressed as I was with the quality of the panelists that we had. When we... the way we structured the evaluation is that we had the panelists, and the panelists had a chair. Then there was a company that worked, consulting company that worked with us that kind of intermediated the work between ICANN and the panelists. Then we had also the community member representative, Sintra, that is unfortunately not here, and she was an observer in the process, so she was not voting, but she's observing the process. So we tried to make as robust as possible the process of the evaluation as we had. One of the things, Avery, you asked me yesterday is what are the things that we learned from this evaluation process and we can improve in the future. I'm not quite prepared to tell you all of the things. I didn't come prepared for that meeting for that because I would like to have an opportunity to revisit some of the feedback we got from the consulting companies, some of the feedback we got from the chair and the SARP members, and also gather some of the feedback from Sintra and have all of this together and present to you in a more comprehensive and organized way what kind of things could or should be done for this program to be improved. There were some points that were made about having a clear evaluation criteria, some of those things that we have there that were really borrowed from or taken from the final report for the Jazz Working Group. They were broad in terms of the way they were proposed. And there was an explanation on some of those thoughts in the final report and previous reports, but maybe we should, there's some things that we could do to even further, you know, clarify that for the evaluators in the future. It took the evaluators a bit longer than what we thought it would take. So this is one of the lessons learned, in my opinion, to be careful in the future when we have more applicants, how much time we actually going to ask the evaluators to dedicate and how many evaluators or how many different panels we need to take into account because of the timing. They did a very comprehensive work in terms of discussing, you know, item by item and everything. But it took much longer than we originally anticipated. So this is one of the things we have to, you know, look for in the future. So my suggestion, Avery, is to have another meeting when you can, and have a more prepared feedback, you know, with more. Basically, you know, just more prepared feedback for that.
Yeah, I guess it's unfortunate that we couldn't have done that here, because there really is a lot of curiosity still, and I think there's a little bit of not understanding, for example, why even after all the decision we still can't know the names and I think that's a lot of people have come up, unfortunately there's not that many here, but a lot of people have come up with that curiosity, and somehow it's ended up feeling a lot more secretive than we thought it would. That certainly we knew that the details about the applicants would be kept confidential, but somehow the whole process seems to have been wrapped in very much a cloud of secrecy. So I'm wondering, how long would it take? Because I'm certainly willing to devote, you know, an entire one of our meetings to a discussion and an analysis of the SARP whenever you feel that, you know, it's time to do that. But so on.
Yeah, so in relation to the release of the names, it took some time for the release of the results being given to the applicants and made public. And we discussed that with the SARP members and discussed that internally, and we all came to a consensus that it would be better to release the names only after the results were out, just to prevent any kind of lobbying or any kind of issues, you know, with the SARP members. You know, it was more of a protection of the SARP members and protection of the program that it would be secrecy. There was no intent absolutely in terms of secrecy, because if you look at the evaluators for the new GTLD program, the individuals are shielded by the companies. Oh, Deloitte is doing that. This company is doing that. The individuals themselves that are doing the evaluation are shielded. So, and in the SARP, they were individual volunteers, right? And we had them using the same code of conduct that all of the evaluators for the new GTOD program were required to use. So that was the only reason why the names were not given up to the time that the results were made public. After that, it's just an internal delay that we need just to address.
Okay, I'll get to you in a sec. So first of all, I'm supposed to remind myself and others that I'm supposed to say my name first. This is Avri Doria speaking. One other question I had was, when do you think it would be time to actually have the larger, broader discussion? How soon do you think that would be possible?
I don't know how. When do you have your next meeting?
Okay, so we have our next meeting probably within a month, and that would be good enough?
Yeah,
okay.
We need to talk to, you know, Sintra and Zahid and, you
right.
know,
yeah.
prepare
I'm
with
a,
them.
I, yeah.
But I think 1 month is okay. looks like
we can
like
try to
time.
Invite. We can try to invite the two of them to the meeting.
I think it would,
that
be,
would be. I invited Sintra to this one. I didn't really know to invite Zahid to it, but plus he's... Okay.
And for the record, Sintra was not gagged, but she understood the rules, you know, in terms of the release of the names.
Oh, whenever I spoke to her, she said, I can't say anything. I'm not allowed to say anything. I mustn't say anything. So I had the feeling she couldn't even really tell us how the process was going. And so perhaps she didn't quite. So I think it'd be good to have a broader conversation. Okay, I had Izumi, and then I had Olivier, and then, yes. Okay.
My name is Izumi Aizu. I have applied, well, volunteered to be the member of the SARP and received some email. Sorry, you were not chosen. That's fine. So, in addition to the names of the selected or real SARP members, may I ask, first of all, how many have applied for and how many were chosen?
My recollection is about 80 applications. I will get back to you with that exact number, but it was about 80 individuals from all over the world, all different backgrounds within what we ask, well-qualified backgrounds. We ended up only having 5 because the number of applicants was not very high. But we were prepared to have a much higher number of SARP members if we had a higher numbers of applicants.
I'm not too sure, if I may, I'm not too sure if other applicants who failed to be chosen were ready or not, but I'm ready to be exposed, and I'd rather like to see when, say, someone apply for, would you like to be listed at the same time as the result is revealed or something like that, for the transparency. Of course, you can opt out. That it could be shameful if you're not selected and you're not deemed unqualified. But that's one item perhaps to discuss, because for the next round, I see little bit similar parallel to NOMCOM, for example, that yes, the real substance of the judgment of could be kept confidential, that's fine to a certain degree, but all the rest could be as much as transparent. And I even cannot really understand the 1 month delay of announcing the names, because the March 12th the result was announced. I think you got to be very careful to make the result announcement so that same carefulness can be applied at the same time, not after, to reveal the names. That gives much more credential, even though application was 3 years old, you know, the succeeding ones one. I'm sorry to make one more question and I stop, okay? Because the other day I made a wrong remarks that there were only 3 applications from the developing countries to the whole GTLD, it sounded like, but it's only for this special program. Is there any ballpark figures or any understanding how many actually came to the new GTLD application out of 1,900 from the developing countries? Is it worth to ask?
Probably not as part of this segment, but certainly as part of our whole outreach. Oh, this was Avery speaking again. Probably part of the other part, some of the other work we're doing, certainly. Okay, I have Olivier Tijani-Yovi, and I wanted to mention that Sintra, who was the observer in the group, has joined us. So, Olivier, please.
Thank you very much, Avery. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript record. There was a mention of the SARP panel member identities being given out. What is the process with regards to any reconsideration requests? Would the SARP have to look at any reconsideration requests again now that their identities have been divulged or not?
And I see that Christine is coming to the table.
Christine Ouellette. So reconsideration requests for any aspect of the program are presented to the ICANN board. They don't go back to the original panel for decision-making.
Thank you. Okay, so next I head to Jenny.
Thank you, Avery. Dijani speaking. I have already talked to Carla and expressed my disappointment regarding the result of this work of 2 years, having calls twice a week to give this result, this JAS working group recommendations, and then having only 3 applications while we had money to support 14. And then from those 3 applicants, we have only 1 who is supported. It is a big disappointment for me, and I think for the whole community. I will say the same. I am asking about any appeal, and we need it because we have first to know why the others weren't supported. What are the criteria that they failed to fulfill, and since we had only 3 applications, if the criteria the failed criteria are not very important, why don't support them if they will improve the presence of developing countries on the net? So a lot of questions like this. Transparency, sure. I understand. I asked Carla already in Toronto, and she told me that they want to protect the SARP members. I understood it, and I never spoke about it. I am not curious, Avery. I don't want to know the names of those people only because I am curious. No. If we had the 3 applicants supported, I will not ask about the names. I will ask about the procedure, how did it is done, so that we can improve the system if we need to improve it. But now that only 1 is supported, I need to see those people and ask them. It is you don't imagine. I am from developing countries, and you remember Caroline, you remember Avery, how strongly I fighted to have this program for the developing countries succeed. So if at the end we have only one supported, it's a big, big disappointment. So please give us, as soon as possible, the composition of the SARP, how the evaluation was done, what are the criteria that make those people fail, so that we can understand, we can perhaps appeal the decision, and we can improve the system after that. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to?
Thank you for your comments, Tijani. I'm also from a developing country, and I share your disappointment on the number of applications we received. And it's my personal view that one of the issues was the timing and the amount of outreach done. So I think, and this is something that is tangible, and I believe it can be addressed in the future. This program, like everything and anything that we do in operations, has room for improvement. Yes, we can improve, you know, some of the criteria. We can improve some of the process. You will see when we make the names of the SARP members available, you will see that it's my personal opinion. Again, I trust we had very qualified individuals that did a good job. And within the overall process, we do have a reconsideration process that can be used. So I would just be, you know, cautious to ask for any additional appeal, any kind of process at this point in time. You know, if this is something that we want to take into account into the next phase as we, you know, and revisit something in the program, it's fine. But at this time, I'm not sure if it would serve the integrity of the program.
Thank you. Jovi, please.
Jovi speaking. I'm not personally disappointed about the number of applications from developing country, but I'm surprised because when the JASP group was working, JASP wanted more funding to support more people. And then at the end, only three applications. And then what also maybe I appreciate is that one decision could be at that period, okay, let's give support to the three application. It was not the case because I think it was a good decision to have a quality because doing a registry business is not something maybe easy. So this brings us also to the general question, something that the working group is working on. That something is not working somewhere. So, and then the working group is working on it. And you already answered my question that it is possible to have reconsideration. So what is reconsideration from a request from the applicant? If the answer is yes for that, this is what I wanted to know. And then the question is that, was the criteria very clearly defined and then people who applied, did they understand clearly the criteria? Because it's very surprising. And again, maybe the committee want to do a good work. There is fund, there is money, but the point is not just to give money to people to run business, but to do a good business. So my point is, are people very, very aware of the criteria before the application? If it's not the case, so that these are things that need to be considered for the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for this. This is Carla Valenti. We have, financial handbook for the applicant support program. In this financial handbook, you will have outlined all of the criteria that is used, and also you have a view of the forms that need to be filled out. And applicants had a chance to ask if they had, you know, some kind of a question. They had a chance to ask. So everything was posted in advance, the same way as for the applicants, that we have the applicant guidebook outlining the criteria and everything that was needed. We had the same for the applicant support program.
Thank you. We have a question from the remote, so Susie was going to read it. Thank you.
This is Susie Johnson. We have a question from Winfrey Yim, and she states, how can we obtain this updated mandate copy? Thanks.
I'm not sure. By the mandate, does she mean the application instructions, which were indeed published and I think can be found on the applicant support wiki pages or web pages?
Yeah, and for the record, the applicant support program, the information about the program is within the new GTOD microsite. So if you, even if you look at the search, you go to ICANN.org and search for applicant support program, it will give you results that lead to that page.
Thank you. I wanted to ask if Cintra would like to sort of talk to us about her experiences and make any other comment.
Thanks, Avery. Apologies for my late arrival. I have been pretty silent on this topic, in strict adherence to the non-disclosure agreement.
Can I interrupt 1 second?
Sure.
Carla came to us for only 20 minutes, and I just wanted to, so that she didn't get up and walk out unidentified while you were speaking. Thank you.
Thank you for having me here, and I'm looking forward to talking to you in about a month.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, please, Cintra.
I just want to share that I understand Tijani's concern, you know, and in my opinion, the SOP panel itself was disappointed by the results, and they wanted to approve more of the applications, but they had strict guidelines to adhere to, and those guidelines, yes, it came from staff, but it also came out of the JAS, you know, and we put in those protections to prevent gaming as well. So, there were instances where maybe there would have been a vague criteria into how to define certain terms and what threshold to use. And in those instances, they did request my input, you know, and I do believe I did, you know, serve the JAS in bringing in the spirit of our discussion over that 2-year period, you know, so I know it seems quite disappointing that only one of the applications were in fact approved, but in all fairness to the process, you know, I do feel that they did act in the best interest of the procedure.
Thank you. I have a question for Mizumi, but I wanted to ask, in terms of, you just mentioned that they came to you for clarifications a lot. From your view, did that happen a lot? Were the instructions not very clear? And did you believe that it was a workable program that you were answering questions about while it was going on?
I did think for the most part. Cintra Suknanan for the record. Thank you, Heidi. For the most part, I do think our criteria were clear. But some instances, for example, public interest. What is a public interest company, not for profit? You know, so that is something that is subjective, and you know, really something that required discussion. And really, they wanted to know what was the spirit of the JAS in putting those criteria in. So they didn't just rely on their opinion of what it should be. So, in my opinion, I mean, I wouldn't say there was. I mean, I do believe that the applications were dealt with efficiently, so I don't think that there was too much time discussing and going back to me. You know, I do think that they did interpret the criteria along the lines we had hoped, and in the instances that they hadn't, I gave my opinion and they determined.
Avery again, thank you. Okay, I had Izumi. Anyone else that wants to speak to this? We also have a microphone for any of you that are participating from the white seats. But please, Izumi.
Thank you, Avery. Izumi Aizu. I have two questions. First one is that, as you said, SAP itself has been or was disappointed. Is there any plan for them to make a report or reflection of what their own conduct? The NOMCOM chair, or NOMCOM, is doing that, And of course, this is the first trial, so it can't be complete. Of course, we can criticize you guys, but that's not fairly constructive unless the members who volunteered also seriously make a good review of its own program. Whether they stay or not, it doesn't really matter, and they may change. But I think in the spirit of the whole, you know, constructiveness, I really would like to encourage all these. And I think they have the duty to do so as well. The second one is a bit nitty-gritty, but there were two versions of the announcement, right, on the March 12th and March 20th as an update. The latter contains the criteria, four that which met this kind of breakdown of. Is there any explanation why it's a two-fold announcement? Was, if appropriate.
Okay. Thank you, Izumi. Avery speaking again. On the first question, I will certainly take an action item to go talk to Zahid, since we at least know his name on it at the moment, and ask for such a report. I don't think we created any obligation to report. I understand the sort of normative feeling that there ought to be one, and I'll certainly go and talk to Zahid and ask for one. And I guess on the second one, I'd go to Christine.
Thank you, Avery. Christine Willett here. Yes, and I will also take back to Carla and the team the request for a summary report from the panel. There may already be documentation, so let me see if we have anything that the panel's already prepared. In terms of the publication of the results, I took ownership of the program late in the game, but my team and I were responsible for publishing the results. And the first publication had limited information about the criteria on which the applications were passed or did not meet the criteria of eligibility for the SAR panel. My team got requests from board members and from GAC members for more information about the rationale and results. And rather than publish information specifically to individual board members or GAC members, we wanted to put that additional information out for all to be available. So that was why the secondary updated announcement was posted, so that everyone had the same set of information.
Thank you. Izumi, you want to have a follow-up?
Yeah.
Please.
It would have been better for you and us if you could add that kind of background information while you updated, because there's no real mention about that. If I'm, correct me if I'm wrong.
Thank you, Izumi. Avery speaking. Okay, Olivier, please.
Thank you very much, Avery. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript record. I wanted to echo the disappointment of my colleague Tijani Benjema with regards to the uptake of the applicant support program. I really don't believe it's an actual criticism of the program itself, nor of the SARP and the SARP's decision. It really has to do with the publicity and the promotion of the program prior to it being and during it being in effect, but I also do realize that times are changing at ICANN, so I am looking forward to several things. First, in any future round, that there would be a lot more publicity for an applicant support program. Second, I would also hope that both the applicant support program itself, but also the way the SARP has operated would be provided with a full review to see how can we do things better. Because obviously, you know, if we do it again, let's do it better. There's always room for improvement. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Avery speaking. I don't see anyone else on it. I think taking... Okay, please come to the microphone, introduce yourself, and
Hi, this is Renee Chang. I'm from Hong Kong, and actually, when I was reading this application applicant support handbook, I find that the scoring criteria, there are lots of points that requires a lot of clarification. And one of these was that there are three components that you use to measure whether this application is worthy of support or not. In the first component, which concerns with public interest, the fourth criteria has to do with measuring if you are from and benefiting a developing economy. And you mentioned a list called the UN DESA list of developing countries. But then, actually, I went to the UN Statistical Department official website, and it stated expressly that within the UN system, there is no such convention or any list that defines what is a developing country, and there are no any hyperlinked PDF file or whatever that is contained in this document. So I'm really confused. Like, which does that list really exist? And if it does, where it is?
Avery speaking. I know that at a time we did see the list. I'd have to check now, and I don't know whether someone else can. There is such a list, but I don't have at my fingertips the sort of URL, and haven't gone to the website in a long time to see whether it has actually linked properly. So it's probably something we should check on and confirm, because when the group was making the recommendations, it was one of the things we pointed to and did look at. We both had that list, and we discussed the indigenous populations issue at the same time in the description. So I think that's something to be hunted down to find out why the link doesn't work and why the list isn't there. I assume that we would have... Is this something you're just seeing now, or is this something you saw at the beginning when applications were being filed? Basically, what I'm asking is this something that, for example, stopped you from applying because you couldn't find such a list, or is this something that, looking in retrospect, you're going back and can't find it? I'm trying to understand whether it blocked you or whether it's just making it difficult to do follow-up research or something.
Actually, the reason why I'm concerned with this applicant support program isn't because I'm trying to apply for any new GTLD string, but that we are actually on a program here in ICANN, and we are a bunch of youth ambassadors, and we'll be having a youth mock meeting on this issue per se, and therefore we are looking very closely into this handbook, and we're trying to see things from our perspective and imagine what would it be like if we are actually trying to apply. And so far we find it very difficult to actually get the list, first of all, because I know that it doesn't exist, or if there is a list of developing countries, it is not within the UN system for sure. And also it's very we actually tried with a lot of names that we imagine, and we find that it's very difficult for an applicant to get anywhere near a high mark, if not just a passed. And in some criterias, if you get that 1 point, you will immediately lose another 1 point. And it's very, I would be safe to say that I personally think that this time you have only three applications, therefore you don't need to do that that great deal of gradation. But imagine if you have like 100 applications and all of them scores merely a pass, and you cannot really compare them. You don't have very high mark. You don't have, the gradation cannot be achieved with this existing scoring criteria. That's the second point I would like to point out.
Thank you. I really appreciate you adding all of that information, because in some sense you answered my question by saying It is as if you were applying, and it is and so I and I can't wait to see what comes out of this. I do think that I really do believe that the list was there, and I know you're certain that it's not. So therefore, I'm really going to both look myself and ask someone from staff who was responsible for that to check further. And I see a hand up, so perhaps.
Hi, Jay Westerdahl. So I just Googled for UN Developing Country List. It's the third link in Google. It's a PDF file on UN.org. So you're free to check it out. But it's there. If you want to come up, you can look at it.
This is Avery again. So perhaps we need to fix the link in wherever it is linked wrong so that it can... I mean, just because people will be looking at this, we are putting out reports, we are saying we did this, we checked that, we had a program, so I think it's important that, you know, whoever can fix such links do fix such links. But thank you for the URL. But I still can't wait to see the... Yes, please.
Hi, everyone. I'm Felix from Hong Kong, and also the Limission Ambassador, same as Wenay. We are going to hold a model ICANN meeting tomorrow on these issues. So my question is that we found that there is only three applications on the first round of new GTLD programs, which is quite a low number. And I just wonder, would it be possible the reason is that the developing countries is not capable of handling our GTLD for the time being, so that they do not apply that? If so, would it be possible for us, or should we refine the whole programs, because this is not the main focus, not about the publicity you have mentioned before, it's about because the developing countries is not capable of handling a GTLD, the top level domain. So that's my question, is that.
Thank you. This is Avery speaking again. You're actually starting to lead into one of the other projects we have going on. Now, I would never let myself be quoted as saying that a developing country could not handle a new GTLD, and I don't think that's at all the case. But in this other this other project that we've got going in this group, the Outreach Evaluation and Recommendations, we're looking at the various reasons for why not only... why there weren't more applications from developing countries, and why there weren't more applications for applicant support. Among the reasons that people have suggested was that they hadn't been an opportunity or an assistance in creating the necessary infrastructure so that, you know, people would have thought to apply. And or that there wasn't sufficient lead-in for the you know, bits of capacity increases that would have made people realize that this was something they could do and could want to do. So there are a lot of reasons being explored. None of them are that, but perhaps as we go on in this project, and this other project, the Outreach Evaluation and Recommendation, is something that we're just starting, and in fact, I'll be very curious to sort of bring in the output from your exercise later this week as part of the sort of thought process behind that project. So you all may want to look at getting involved in that. But you know, I would never say it's because they couldn't, but perhaps the capacity, knowledge, interest, and time, all those things together formed a complex that made it very difficult for someone to make that decision. But yes, Sintra, and then Rafiq, what you're
Hi, Sintra Suknanan. I'd just like to extend what Avery is saying. Maybe there are auxiliary circumstances that make it difficult for an applicant. For instance, in some developing countries, it's difficult to register a not-for-profit company. So because of that, you know, I mean, some applicants may not have gotten that point, you know, simply because the environment is not structured for the criteria that would have been set.
Thank you. Rafiq, please.
So thanks, Avery. It's quite strange to be on this side
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay.
And Jin, introduce yourself, even though I did call you Rafik.
Okay, Rafik Damak from Tunisia, and I was the co-chair in the jazz working group with my friend and colleague. So I'm not active in your working group, but I want to and unfortunately I joined late. I want to ask about the timeline of your outcomes. I know that you are working in the evaluation of the outreach, but also I'm just wondering if you are going to work in kind of jazz recommendation 2.0, if you want to extend the recommendation or to evaluate also the implementation of that program. It's not just what the jazz working group recommended. So what you are planning exactly is not just about the outreach, and because we had that discussion about the limitation, it didn't work. So just to get ideas, so what you are planning is not just to evaluate the outreach, but to have evaluate what was done as a recommendation in the jazz working group, but also how it was implemented.
Okay, thank you. Avery speaking again. I actually don't know the answer to your question. Certainly within the outreach, evaluation, and recommendations, I don't think actually evaluating the work of the jazz or the work of the SARP was included. SARP was certainly one of the things, applicant support issues is one of the things that's in our scope, and certainly we can talk about doing an evaluation, but I don't, is jazz as a group still open, and perhaps it's the jazz group itself that should be looking at the program and doing an evaluation between the GNSO and the ALAC in that joint group?
That's a good question, because it's not dependent, and it's up to our, how to say, the ALAC and GNSO to decide about the fate of the jazz working group. It's just an active working group, but it will be good to know if it will extend its mandate or just we will do with this evaluation. So maybe Olivia can reply to that.
Thank you. Avery speaking again. I personally think, and then I'm going to turn the microphone over to Evan, but I really think it is something for your group to consider whether you do want to continue and do the analysis. I would think it was in the scope, but Evan, please.
Yeah, I honestly thought that that particular working group was sort of shut down after it did its job. I mean, that may not be the case, but since it was dual chartered, then we have the onerous issue of going back to the two groups that did the chartering and figuring out if they still both believed it was alive. And I probably think it would be a little less onerous if we just took it on here.
Okay, Carlton, please.
Thank you, Carlton Samuels, for the record. I was co-chair of the Jazz Working Group. What I can tell you is that the working group is adjourned sine die, as they say. It's not totally done, but to do an assessment of what the working group did would mean that the charter would have to be adjusted, and that is the issue. It is, as you know, it's a joint working group, a cross-community working group between GNSO and the ALAC. And in order for us to do what the co-chair Rafik Damak is suggesting, it would require an adjustment in the charter. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got a person standing at the microphone. I've got Ben Sintra, and then I've got a remote. So please, person at the microphone.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Jerry. I'm from NetMachine.Asia and from Hong Kong. And I have a question about the decision regarding the disqualification of candidates, because I'm aware that if they are disqualified, meaning that they did not meet the threshold criteria, and they will be excluded from the new GTLD application. And in my opinion, I feel that this is very discouraging for many of the developing countries, because if they enter the program, and there's high chance that they're disqualified, and they can't even continue their application, even they maybe they were willing to pay the full fee, and they would not need the subsidy. And so I'm aware that this decision was to avoid gaming, and I'm not sure if there actually exists, but I do feel that there is a possibility. But this level of discouragement, I feel that there should be other means to substitute. So I'm just wondering if there are alternatives to avoid gaming instead of the current practice. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think that that would be a really good question for the review that either the jazz group would do or this group would do in terms of that. I think that was a very big issue we had in terms of how to prevent gaming, and I remember that on that specific point, there was a very large difference of opinion in the community as to whether the staff implementation had been an appropriate method. There was certainly not unanimous community support for the process as it was run. There was a mixed view. So I think that that would be, you know, obviously we can't do anything about any appeals or what happened, but I think in terms of looking at what we do next, I think that's a very, you know, important point for us to discuss further. We needed to stop gaming, but we didn't need to be punitive about it. Okay, sorry, I didn't get a chance to thank. This is Avery speaking again. I didn't get a chance to thank Christine Willett, who came and spent her time. She had to go off to, I guess it was a board meeting, and I didn't want to interrupt the speaker to say goodbye to her and to thank her for having been here, but I just want to get that on our recording, that I'm very appreciative of the time she gave us. Okay, then I had Sintra, and then I had Tijani.
Thank you, Sintra Suknanan. I just wanted to say in particular to staff that the jazz recommendations, just one aspect of it was the sub and the criteria. The jazz also recommended follow-up action in ensuring that applicants that were approved of financial support still maintained their status so as to continue to be beneficiaries of that support, so that a not-for-profit organization, for instance, would maintain not-for-profit status, not switch to for-profit once supported. So this is an ongoing process, and in this respect, I do think the jazz still has a role to play.
Thank you. Tijani, please.
Thank you, Avery. I don't think that we can speak now about assessing or evaluating the work of the SARP or the evaluation process, since we don't have any information about it. We know only the name of the chair of this SARP, and we know that only one applicant have been supported or have been approved for support. So when we have all the information, then we can speak about the evaluation. And then I think that we can do this evaluation through this working group, through a revived and rechartered jazz working group, through a cross-community working group where all the members of the jazz will be in, plus people from CCNSO, et cetera, et cetera. So the most important thing is first have the information.
I agree. I think I'm going to come close, unless there's someone that wants to speak, to bringing this one to a close at the moment. I think that, you know, we've talked to Carla. She's basically going to come back with a report. I think we're going to – oh, I've got a hand up. Okay, let me finish what I'm saying, and then I'll go to the bottle waving. This is Avery speaking again. And then one of the things is to extend the invitation to the members of the jazz group to attend that call, even though – a lot of those are already in this group, but just to attend to extend an invitation to the jazz group to participate when we do have that reporting. Yes, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Avery. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript record, and I will accuse you of having a tunnel vision, which is something that a participant develops usually on a Wednesday of an ICANN meeting, and it has happened to me on several occasions today as well. Before the bottle, there was a hand. Before the hand, there was just... Anyway, I just wanted to be clear on the charter of the Joint Applicant Support Working Group. As my colleague Carlton Samuels, who was a co-chair of the working group, mentions, the charter itself does not include any follow-up on the work. So even though the JAS report might have stipulated that there should be a follow-up, the working group itself is not chartered to pursue that follow-up. And therefore, both the ALAC and the GNSO Council, if they wish to do so, would have to either amend the charter or recharter a new group. That's something which will probably have to be undertaken soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Avery speaking again. I therefore request that the co-chairs of JAS, the two leaders of ALAC and GNSO, sort of, and the liaison to this group, and I'll even participate to have a discussion about, I think it's apparent that somebody needs to do a follow-up. So I think that's a discussion we need to have to figure out how that follow-up is best done, you know, et cetera. I know Tijani recommended perhaps we go to a broader across community and start bringing in CCNSOs and everything else. We need to talk about, I think it's obvious we need a follow-up. How we do that follow-up, who does that follow-up, I think needs to be discussed. Yes, Evan.
And I've been making the point repeatedly that this can't be done in a vacuum, that we can take this along with the limited success of the objection procedure that received so few community objections. And I think that there's an overall thing. I don't think doing it in a vacuum, this is not just a matter of applicant support. It's not just a matter of how few objections were received for consideration. There is a massive problem in either getting the word out or the people who are getting the word don't care. Both are problematic.
Thank you, though I admit I'm starting to worry about trying to boil the ocean. Yes, Izumi.
In addition to my previous suggestion of asking voluntary reflection of the evaluation team members, another perhaps suggestion is purely voluntary, not obligating or pressuring or criticizing at all of their participation to this follow-up process, such as maybe we'll have another round of open meeting like this, and either the chair plus anybody who wants to join the meeting in a very frank, candid manner. I do trust them, their integrities, and if they are to stand to that, if I were chosen, for example, I'm ready to go and explain what we've done, what we cannot tell, and things like that. So that is perhaps for the benefit of all, I'd like to really suggest. Thank you.
So this is Avery speaking again. So you're suggesting that I extend an invitation as we start to talk about this more also to Zahid and that group, if I understand correctly. Okay, I will do that. So I will take sort of the token of going around and trying to get people to work on how we do this follow-up. I will look at it, as Evan suggests, in its relationship to the outreach evaluation and recommendation, and perhaps we'll have to change the name of that to something because it's going beyond the issue of outreach, which means we would have to go back to the ALAC to have our charter reworked, but that's all good stuff that chairs and stuff are supposed to do, so that's fine. So I guess we'll follow up on that. Just to get through the rest of the things on the agenda here. And I think this was a great conversation, so I really appreciate all the things, and I really do look forward to seeing what you all do with it, because I think that will be fascinating. And I hope that after you've done that, you'll be willing to join us in conversations in terms of using what you've learned as contribution to what we do, because one of the things I see as most important in all this evaluation and review and whatever is, what are we going to do for remediation? That word's not written anywhere, but that to me is really what this is all about, is we had great intentions, we did a lot of work, and it didn't come out in a way that makes anybody happy. So remediation for me is what this is all about in the long run. So I really look forward to it. Okay, in terms of the outreach evaluation and recommendation, and who knows, maybe we're in a good place because we're still at the beginning of that process. We talked about it. We had some initial work done in terms of trying to form theories about why there had been so few applicants from developing economies, why there had been so few applicants for applicant support. And then Evan brought in the additional issue, which expanded the notion, which was, although I'm still not sure that ALAC has approved that expansion, of why were there so few objections brought through the at-large process, that what again was a process that we spent about a year for putting together a process, and then it didn't get used. So there's like many years of many people's work that went into these issues, went into these things, as Evan has said. And one of our projects has been looking at why these things didn't work and what were the issues. So that project started out with a thing of doing some theory formation, of just trying to sort of collect the ideas people had about why, and then such, and then forming, and then doing a review. That group is ongoing. That work is ongoing. We had a whole meeting this week to talk about that. What I'd like to now do is actually turn the meeting to Dev, who basically was responsible as the leader of that review group of the objection process, and ask him to do a little bit of a recap, and sort of similar to the discussion we've had on SART, to sort of give us a first-hand analysis on that program. Was it workable? Did we have it right? And what do we do for the future?
Okay, thank you very much, Avi. Devananta Lakshmi speaking. Well, there was a lot of activity towards the end of the deadlines for at-large comments for consideration by the review group. Since the Toronto meeting, the original deadline for comments was around mid-November 2012. At that time, though, the ICANN was considering extending the objection period from January to March, and this was undergoing a public comment period at the time, having been announced just before the ICANN meeting in Toronto. In Toronto, it was undergoing a 30-day public comment period, so the deadline for the original deadline was still extended. Because at the Toronto meeting, we decided, okay, instead of having 1 month for us to review and analyze comments, we will cut it down to 2 weeks to just give as much time as possible to anyone who wanted to raise any comments on objection grounds, either on limited public interest or community objection grounds. That deadline passed, but with no comments. The actual formal announcement from ICANN that the objection period was extended occurred around mid-December 2012. So the timeline was adjusted again, and then a call for comments was reissued, and the second call was reissued just at the beginning of the year in January 2013. That the deadline for comments was the 15th or 16th of January. Actually, only at that time, and at time of January, there was only one person who requested that a wiki page be created regarding .nyc, the application for .nyc, and that page was created immediately. But he did not initially follow up. However, coming to the deadline of the 15th or 16th of January 2013. We received several comments and single comments. There were comments regarding Amazon. There were comments regarding, let me just pull up the list. Amazon, there was comments regarding Patagonia. There was a comment regarding CBA. There was a comment on multiple strings by RJ Glass. And there was a comment on .Africa. So, and in addition to follow-up comments on .NYC. So when we first started to look at those the comments, the comment regarding .Africa was more of a comment of expressing support for an applicant. So there was no real objection concerns really raised. So that was taken care of. With regards to the comment on multiple strings by RJ Glass, it was a comment regarding the new GTLD program as a whole, and it was referred to this working group. Regards to CBA, which was an application by the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, the comment against that was regarding that the letter CBA stands is a well-known acronym for Cordoba in Argentina. The group review group determined that given that the letter CBA is an acronym and that acronym, you know, had multiple meanings in many countries, and you know, we did a search, and you could have, you know, like there was things like Canadian Bar Association, Chicago Basketball Association, and so forth. Then there was really no limited public interest or community objection grounds, and therefore that was no further consideration was taken. So the discussion then looked at the remaining strings, Amazon, Patagonia, and .nyc. Now, in the following week, which was around the 26th of January, there was a comment submitted by IMIA, the International Informatics Medical Association, and regarding the applicants for health. And they had characterized five applicants for health. Four were applicants for the ASCII version of health, and one was an IDN called Yang Tang. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but it was an IDN that was considered to be a translation to health or healthy, according to the original comment. Given that comment was submitted just before the review group group conference call on that day, it was decided, okay, well, let's take on that comment, and then let's evaluate for limited public interest or community objection grounds. We determined that really that there was no limited public interest grounds on either Patagonia, Amazon, .nyc, and .health. And the concerns really came about regarding trying to figure out, well, what is a community in terms of the community objection grounds. Just a reminder that the community objection grounds have four tests for which a community objection can be sustained. They were community, substantial opposition, targeting, and detriment. And the key thing was that all four tests had to be passed. If there's one test that could not be proven, then the application would not be sustained. So there was a lot of discussion over two or three conference calls about, you know, is there a community for Amazon? Is there a community for Patagonia? And what exactly counts as substantial opposition? And the fact that given that there was only one comment for regarding Amazon and Patagonia, and it was literally only a three line comment, it was kind of very hard to figure out what to do. And so we reissued a call again to say, please submit comments on this. And we got some more additional comments on especially Patagonia. The person objecting to .nyc had provided, a wealth of information regarding why, and he was trying to justify why a community objection could be sustained on those four grounds. So we decided to rank the way to move forward was to rank each of the four factors in the four criterion as specified in the applicant guidebook. So a table was put up, and all the review group members had to either pass or fail or say unknown for each of those four factors based on the information we had received and based on the discussions that we had in those calls. And ultimately, just before the final submission, the .nyc stated that the person objecting to .nyc, they had communicated with the applicant The applicant had proposed a community board that would, which satisfied the objectors' concerns. So that was no longer ranked or considered. So when we finally ranked the remaining strings, Amazon, Patagonia, and the five application strings for health, Amazon and Patagonia both passed the community and substantial opposition, but in terms of the detriment for both Amazon and Patagonia, it did not pass. And this also came into the discussion of what exactly was detriment. You know, is there a potential future detriment denying the string for the potential community there? But again, it was a lot of difficulty in determining what was the quote material detriment. So in that case, the Amazon and Patagonia were not passed. Regarding the five applications for health, the majority of the review group that filled out the form passed all four of the factors and four criterion, and therefore the decision was then taken to then, we'll now begin to draft the objection statement on five objection statements for all five applicants. So once that started happening, it was a pretty intense schedule. It was about 9 to 10 meetings within a month, sometimes twice, two meetings quite twice a week. We just began drafting the objection statements, each on the four factors, and this was eventually approved by the review group. We used a Google Doc, and I've seen three pen holders were picked based on their legal experience: Adela Dansu, Justine Chu, and Seth Reese. And I have to say, they really performed an outstanding job in trying to come up with that objection statement in such a very short time. I believe it was literally done within 7 to 9 days, and it was really a tough, watching the clock because we were running out of time because it was mid-February. And of course, the deadline was for the objection was March 13th. So once that the objection statements was considered to be okay by the review group, it was then posted to the five relos. There was a conference call with the relos held. The relos had some substantial discussions, especially Naralo and AP Ralo. I should say that some of the concerns, there was several concerns raised while these objection statements were being drafted. Once the announcement came out that once that the objection statement would be drafted, we started receiving lots of emails from the applicants, and also several concerns were raised. For example, why did IMIA object to health and not other terms like healthcare and so forth, which potentially was seen as falling within that community's potentially being targeted, and all of those questions were asked, and the objector responded, and all of this communication was all added to the wiki. Well, if near real time, literally within several hours of it being received, in order to try to keep up with the information flow. There was also a concern then raised regarding the IDN, Yang Kang, as to whether, if it is really a translation to healthy, then perhaps it should not have really been considered or grouped with these five objections because, healthy is a state of mind and state of body and not really something dealing with the health field per se. Now, this is also disputed in that the characters for Yang Kang could also be looked at as a noun which is health or as healthy. So there was a potential end-user confusion in that regard. In the end, what we did was that before the statements were released, we separated we didn't group them anymore. We said there was four objections against Dot Health, and then a one objection statement against Yang Kang. So the relos all reviewed it, and as per the process, it required three relos to approve the objection statement as is, for then the ALAP to then consider. So the three relos passed the objection statements against the ASCII.health, and did not pass the, and there was not enough support by the relos to support the objection statement for the IDN Yang Kang, and therefore that was no longer considered by the ALAC. Now the ALAC, now during all that time as well, I should mention that there was also a new concept introduced regarding the public interest commitments, but the review group did not really look at this information, and indeed what the review group had to do, because the information was coming in so quickly around that, it was ultimately decided that, look, we could not really take into account all the new information here, because we will then have to then go back and redecide. So the decision as of when it was done on February 8th, we have to stick to that and then let the relos decide, okay, based all our decision based on the information we had as of February 8th. So the relos will have all the information that, you know, the applicant said, you know, clarifying what their application was about and so forth, and the relos can then decide that. So, the ALAC had all of this information, including the PICs, which was published, I think, literally as the relos finished their considerations. So, and then the ALAC then had a vote. There was also a special call for the ALAC to review all of the information, and the vote was taken, and three of the applications for the health received enough votes by the ALAC for the objection to be filed, and then the statements was put together, and then the statements have been filed. Well, I think that's a summary. I will take a break now and
right.
Probably
yes.
Open for the
catch
questions.
Your breath. Thank you very much. That was not only was it a complete report, it was an incredible amount of work that you led and that your team did, and so I thank you for that. There were questions. Did you have a question? Please go ahead, Susan.
Hi. For the record, Susan Chalmers, Policy Lead, Internet New Zealand. Not so much a question, but a comment, and relating to Devanand's recent report. So Internet NZ submitted a comment on that book, which focused more generally on the question of closed generics. The point of my intervention is to compliment and to thank the ANGWG for how it handled the comment. It was very helpful for us. So, for example, when we submitted the comment, we were able to see how the community was reacting in the public forum, and that is actually very beneficial for somebody who is developing a position to see it kind of being pushed and pulled and prodded. And so we appreciate that. And also, I just wanted to note that the reasons for why the working group elected not to take the comment further were then explained, and this was posted publicly. And when ICANN later opened up the consultation for closed generics, for us, we were very grateful to have that explanation posted just as a register to see that we had been participating in the process and had raised this. So that was of extreme value. And so we thank you very much for how that was handled.
Thank you for the feedback. Evan.
Please. By the way, did you have a chance to read the ALAC statement on closed generics, not specifically to do with the dot book issue, but we actually considered the entire issue of how to deal with closed generics at the time that it was really, really heating up, and that while there were other communities that had a really hard time reconciling different approaches to it, we actually came up with something that acknowledged the difficulties with it, but also saw that enclosed generics because of the way that ICANN had sort of shoehorned the way that you could either, you know, do things a certain way with registrars or not, that if a registry wanted to try something such as like create a TLD and give away the second levels but hold on to ownership, they would have to in fact come in as a closed generic in that way. And so one of the things we saw was that there was a potential for actually stifling innovation in how TLDs wanted to do this by forcing everything to either be called a closed generic or wide open. And we really grappled with this, and it wasn't really clear-cut. We saw the danger potential in the way some companies wanted to do closed generics, but also thought that by doing a blanket statement against it, that it was going to siphon off the potential that there could be some really interesting things done off the beaten path with this stuff.
Thank you. Cintra.
Thank you. Cintra Suknanan. Devanan, again, thank you for your work you have done on this this subgroup. Having come to this point, can you tell me if there are any tweaks or any changes in the definitions or the procedure that you would have made the next time around?
Just before you start, I just want to point out that there's 5 more minutes, and one of the things I was going to ask you for is a at another time, a written wrap-up that goes largely into what Cintra said, but if you have a quick comment.
Yes, thanks. I mean, yes, I think there was some, I guess some of the things that had problems was that one, there seems to be a great lack of understanding about the objection process by the at-large community. I think the concept that people think, well, all I need to do is just say, I object, and that was it. And they would not really understand that, look, there was a very strict threshold. And I think when the people were looking at, say, the GAC advice, and I think people felt that, well, we have the same ability, and we really do not have that ability. The GAC has an ability to give advice on a variety of things. They could say they don't like the applicant, they don't like the business model, you know, all sorts of things. We had a very limited mandate to look at objection grounds. And I think most persons did not really understand that. So, you know, so unfortunately, the quality of the dialogue didn't really really take into that an account. That leads to the second problem, is that the comments came really literally 2 hours before the deadline. You know, and I mean, I was mentally going to say, well, you know, all right, well, that was it. No more comments then, and so forth. And then suddenly all the comments suddenly came in the last 2 hours here. So, and of course, the conference call immediately after was like, well, you know, well, it was a bit difficult because, well, we just got the comments, so we couldn't really decide on anything. So that put a lot of pressure, I think, for the review group to really handle. A possible way to tweak it might have been to set some sort of, like, threshold, so that if there were more, like, several comments, like, say, 2 or 3 comments instead of just 1 comment on a particular topic or a particular issue, then so that, you know, at least there's more discussion on the matter. But I'll just point out that if we had done that, then literally there would have been 0 comments under this process. So somehow better education, although, you know, we went through this in excruciating detail, you know, with flowcharts, it was translated, a 1-page document was done. So I'm not sure what exactly it needs to communicate that to the at-large community. So the second thing is the threshold of comments. Were there any other possible tweaks? Hard to say at this point. I must really commend the review group for really working under pressure. You know, because and I have to say I was very impressed with how the review group handled itself. They took the job seriously, you know, and at one point when I asked, you know, hey, do you want to stop? Because and say, well, we can't do it in this time, all of them said, no, we got to do this. And they fought very hard to produce the statement and, you know, comment actively on it and ask questions. So it was actually, I would say, it was really a huge positive on that aspect, you know, for the at-large community and the ELAC.
Thank you. Olivia, you pretty much get the last question.
Thank you very much, Avery. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript record, and it was actually just a couple of notes of thanks. The first one to the GAC for having actually been able to share some of their knowledge in the tools that they were going to use, and then IT staff, ICANN IT staff, to have provided us with tools to be able to track the applications. That was done in a very fast time, and so the wiki pages and so on really, really helped from an observer's point of view, really helped with the transparency of the process itself. I also wanted to thank the review team itself. They've done an amazing job, and it is, you have to remember, this is the first time at large, or the ALAC has been provided with a mission to have an operational concern rather than just an advisory concern. So it was a case where it was really a step into the unknown, and definitely a step that I think the community managed to do pretty well. And so that's something to note. And that's, of course, thanks to the shepherding of the chair of that review group. So I do have to thank you, and I'd like just a quick a round of applause for your work.
Okay, and there's nothing so sure as to bring somebody up to the microphone as to say that someone else had the last word. So, please.
Thank you very much. It was quite encouraging. I thank you for...
Please give your name and...
Oh, sorry. My name is Christophe Lelieu. I'm French. I'm a lawyer. one question about the objection you made... No, the summary you made about the community objections. Just to understand, I'll just say yes. There are many few objections, like 5 for Elf, Amazon, Patagonia, Book. Yeah?
Okay, David Hans Tillaxing speaking. The at-large had an opportunity to file objections on community grounds or limited public interest, and we received comments on Patagonia, Amazon, NYC, and applications for the health. So, but ultimately, the objection statement, we felt that after a review of the comments received and the information we had, that the community objections cannot be sustained against Amazon, Patagonia, and the regarding NYC, the applicant kind of withdrew his comments because the dispute was resolved. So it was only felt the applications on the health, as well as the IDN for health or healthy Yang Kang, that was put forward.
And
thank
no
you.
And no application had been rejected or blocked because of the comments or objections.
That process is still ongoing. The objections were filed, and now they're in the objection process and the evaluators. So we don't know yet.
And we will get information?
I don't know. It's in its process. They've got 30 days to answer, and then there's a process. I don't know the exact couple months. Thanks.
Actually, just to follow up, David Antelaxin speaking. I believe on the new GTLD update earlier this week, ICANN is intending to announce the formal list of objections filed, and that will trigger the 30-day response by the applicants. So the process will then start.
But that's the 30-day response for the applicants, and then there's a certain amount of time during which they're evaluated. So we really don't know when we'll know the answer, which is, I think, what I said. Okay. We had one more item here, how we continue to work on the rollout stuff. We'll talk about that on our next phone call as our hour and a half is done. I thank you all. I think it was a really great conversations on the two issues we did cover. So talk to you all on the phone. Thank you, everyone. It's over.